Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Jill Bender. Thanks so much for being here today. We have just a great show planned for you. Before we get to that, I just want to let you know that you've probably been listening all month long to us talk about the Live Free Challenge. Today's the last day to sign up if you want to win a free t-shirt. And I know that's really important because you're going to be doing some training and running or biking or a lot of things to keep yourself active to raise money to stop sex trafficking across the world. You can go to our website and find out more about that at myfaithradio.com, how to sign up, how to get that t-shirt. The last official day to sign up, though, is 7:31, is the 31st of July. So you do still have some time, but we, of course, want you to get that t-shirt. So head to our website and find out more about that. Well, today we're going to be talking about kids and marriage and the two of them actually together, which is sometimes doesn't blend as well as we would hope it would. In fact, as I was reading the book that our guest wrote today, I was chuckling very many times about how unprepared I was for how marriage would change once kids entered my life. Ted, did you find that as well?
Yes, it does have an impact, to put it lightly. Yes, certainly.
You do kind of think that it's going to be blissful and wonderful, and it's going to be so easy because you love each other so much, and now you just bring this third person in, and it's just going to make life a lot better. But immediately, I kind of knew that things were going to be a little bit different because I had a difficult pregnancy, difficult delivery, and was in the hospital for a number of days after my first child. And it was just a couple of days before Mother's Day when I finally got released. Actually, the night before Mother's Day is when I got released. And my husband said, "Well, we're going to the brunch, aren't we?"
Oh, my.
With his family of about 40 people.
Oh.
And I remember getting in the car and just thinking, what have I gotten myself into? I haven't slept for days. I can hardly walk. It was just very funny. And then, of course, everyone wants to see the baby. And already there was a big strain on my husband and I's relationship just from day one.
Oh, sure.
Day one out in the world.
And you throw in the sleep deprivation and everything else that goes with it. We were just talking about that last week, I think. Like,
yes.
Could you imagine putting up with those nights, interrupted nights now at this age versus 10, 15 years ago, whatever it is?
Yes.
That'd be a little more challenging.
We were talking about a friend of ours who is having her first baby, and she's almost 50 years old, which would be about where I am. And that's why I said, I can't imagine. I can't imagine living through the sleep deprivation and being able to function for the rest of the life. In fact, last night I had sleep deprivation anyway, because there were some crazy people who were fishing out. I don't even know what they were doing, but they were doing something at about 2 a.m.
Oh, wow.
Right outside our bedroom in a boat with really bright lights and these big spear guns. I'm not sure what they were fishing for, but if anyone knows what someone might be fishing for.
Spearfishing?
I don't know. What fish? Muskrats? Creatures of some sort? Creatures of the Black Lagoon? I don't know. I'd love to know, though. If you happen to have an idea, give us a call at 877-933-2484 because I'm stumped and exhausted.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're going to talk a little bit about marriage and kids and how that changes. And we just have a wonderful couple who has a lot of experience with that. They have 4 kids of their own, Patrick and Ruth Schwenk. I'll tell you about them a little bit when we come back. But first, we want to give you the point from John Stone Street. And he discusses another thing I think I could talk about for about 3 hours is how smartphones are negatively affecting our relationships. And I think I could put a little bullet point there of teens. How are they affecting teens' relationships as well? Let's see what he has to say.
What's the smartphone doing to your child? For the Colson Center for Christian Worldview, I'm John Stone Street with The Point. Writing at the American Conservative, Rod Dreher describes a major challenge facing educators, getting students to put down smartphones. Even if not used to access pornography or bully, Rod writes, students spend enormous time on their smartphones, ignoring everyone around them. Some of them have trouble sustaining an actual conversation for more than a few minutes. Citing MIT's Sherry Turkle, Rod goes on to describe how smartphones are actually degrading the quality of human relationships. Many students are emotionally isolated, lacking empathy, and the ability to form bonds based on trust. So what do we do? Set boundaries. Limit your children's time on their phones, especially during the week. Ban the phone from the dinner table. Don't let them take the phone into the bedroom. Ask whether your young teen even needs a phone. Yes, all his friends have one, but so what? Your child's development is more important. Come to Breakpoint.org. I'll link you to Dreher's important article. I'm John Stone Street.
Well, I'm hoping that my teen was listening to that because we have some issues around that in my family as well. Well, let's talk a little bit about marriage and kids. It's a wonderful time, but the transition from married to married with kids can be a little bit tough. More time is taken. There's more to do. There's a tighter schedule. There's less money and just that physical exhaustion of being responsible for these wonderful little creatures. As much as you love your children and you work to train them up for the future, raising kids does put a bit of a strain on marriage. And if we're not careful, kids can tend to take center stage over our relationship as husband and wife. So my guests for today are a husband and wife who have teamed up to write a book called For Better or For Kids. And in it, they outline biblical wisdom and some practical help to help our marriages stay strong and growing, even when there are kids in the house. So let me tell you a little bit about them and we'll get them on the show. Patrick Schwenk is a husband, father, and pastor. Ruth Schwenk is a wife, mom, and blogger. She's the author of a couple of other books we've had her on the show before. Hoodwinked, 10 Myths Moms Believe and Why We All Need to Knock It Off, and Pressing Pause, 100 Quiet Moments for Moms to Meet with Jesus. She and her husband are the creators of ForTheFamily.org and TheBetterMom.com. We'll have links to those on our website. Patrick and Ruth have been married for more than 17 years. They have four children and have been in full-time ministry for over 15 years. Welcome, Patrick and Ruth.
Thank you.
Hi, Joe. Thanks so much.
Well,
thanks so much for having us on.
It's great to have you both here and have you both at the same time. So we're just going to have a great time talking about For Better or For Kids. So we all kind of have expectations of what it means to be married, and kind of some go into the relationship a little more prepared than others. But I'm guessing that you found, as I have, that you really can't prepare for every situation that you're going to encounter as a husband and wife.
You know, you really can't. I remember even before we had kids, when we were in college, we were married and had a red Volkswagen Jetta. And I remember we knew that Ruth was pregnant. Shortly after that, we sold that and we bought a minivan, this old kind of 1986, you know, Ford Aerostar that when we went through puddles, the water would come in. And I knew even before the first child came along that our life had drastically changed. And so there are so many things as you transition from married to married with children that you can't anticipate. And it can be quite a transition for a lot of couples.
One of the things that you wrote, I thought was really poignant, is you said there's actually a missing vow for couples when we make our vows as husband and wife. What is that?
Well, you know, I think the missing vow is really the subtitle to our book, and that's a vow to love your spouse with kids in the house. And as a pastor, I've stood at the altar and done all sorts of wedding ceremonies over the years. We've all sat in those and heard those vows exchanged. And I remember thinking, boy, there's a significant vow missing from this whole exchange, and that's that vow to go on loving your spouse with kids in the house.
Ruth? Yeah, I think when you first get married, you just think this is going to be so easy, and everything's going to be complete, you know, and we forget that there's so many different seasons of life. And so it's really a lifelong commitment. And we forget about how much things change once you have kids. It's a whole new world. So definitely that's, you know, was our heart behind writing this book. It's just, you know, recognizing that it is really hard, but that marriage is possible. It's possible to have a strong marriage during that season.
So, Ruth, tell me about your own realization that having kids in the house was changing your relationship with Patrick and yourself in a way that you didn't anticipate.
Well, I think just in general, motherhood, too, you just don't realize how much it takes out of you. And I remember when, you know, I had three of my children at home and they were really little, and I was just trying to get through the day. And so, you know, I wrote a blog post in my blog not that long ago. You know, when motherhood is exhausting and you're supposed to be a good wife too. And I think that just sums up a lot of moms, how they feel. You know, home, I'm so tired, I'm exhausted, and I'm supposed to love my husband too. And so I think, you know, at that point in my life is when it was all coming to a head. And I realized how important it was that, yeah, my marriage might look different during that season, but it's still important to keep it a priority because, again, the seasons will change. And Patrick and I, we're in a little bit different of a season now. Our children are a little bit older, and we finally can breathe a little more. And I'm so glad that we were intentional during that time, even though it was hard.
Mm. So you write that some marriages do become kid-centered, but that God's word really speaks against that, against marriages being kid-centered. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, the balance, you know, for us that we lay out in the book is that, you know, there is a danger in becoming overly child-centered, and there's a, you know, equal danger of becoming overly me-centered. And God really desires for us to, you know, to have a God-centered marriage where all of those things can be balanced. But I think, you know, in parenting, I think the challenge becomes, you know, when we want to be great parents, and that desire to be great parents really overshadows, you know, having a great marriage. And I think that that's sort of one of the first signs that, you know, a couple is heading down the wrong road. I mean, obviously we want to love our kids, and they take a tremendous amount of time to nurture them and train them. But oftentimes a healthy, vibrant, God-centered marriage kind of gets kicked to the backseat or to the curb. And so, you know, couples will, you know, begin to neglect their own needs, and romance begins to cool, and, you know, a couple's attention and affection can shift from a spouse to a child in, you know, sort of an excessive or unhealthy way. And I think, you know, those are some of the signs that a couple is maybe leaning too far in the direction of being a child-centered, having a child-centered marriage.
Well, we're talking with Patrick and Ruth Schwenk today about their book, For Better or for Kids, A Vow to Love Your Spouse with Kids in the House. We'll talk more with Patrick and Ruth when we come back from a break. You're listening to Connecting Faith. And if you're listening and say, hey, I'd love to get a copy of that book into my hands, or someone who is maybe just getting ready to have their first child, give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. We have a handful of books to give away, or you can go to myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith. You can submit a request for a book that way as well. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Great to have you here this afternoon. I'm talking to Patrick and Ruth Schwenk, authors of the book For Better or for Kids, A Vow to Love Your Spouse with Kids in the House. We've been chatting about the difficulties, things maybe that we didn't expect as a couple going from just a couple to a couple with kids. And sometimes that takes a strain on our marriage. Patrick and Ruth, one of the chapters that you spend quite a bit of time in is just communication. How do we continue to talk to each other, even though we might both be going through some kind of strange transitions of our own in being parents, things that maybe we didn't expect? Ruth, you wrote just a great blog on listening, and that's a really important aspect of communication when you're dealing with married with kids. Can you talk a little bit about that and why listening is important?
Yeah, you know, I think when you're married with kids and kids are all around you during the day, it can be really hard to listen. And so I think this actually is kind of, it takes both of you understanding that. So there's a lot of times that Pat and I, we really want to talk about something, but maybe it has to wait. And maybe it's okay to say, okay, I really want to hear you right now, but let's talk about this later. But the importance definitely is in giving your full attention when you can. It makes anybody feel valued when you listen, and part of communication is listening. But there's a whole flip side to that, which is something I've really had to learn. And that's also communicating, in that chapter I talk a lot about it, communicating your expectations. And so for me, that was a real struggle, realizing that Pat, if I don't share with him, he can't listen to me. And so what I might expect and think inside I'd like him to do, or I wish, you know, it could be as simple as I wish you'd take out the trash, or I wish you'd listen to me. I don't, you know, I'm having a hard day. but maybe I'm not really sharing those things with him. A lot of times I think in our minds we think we have these expectations, but we don't share them. And so that's a huge part of communication as well. And in that chapter, we really address the importance of communicating in the midst of what we call chaos a lot of times with kids around.
Patrick, what are you finding have been in your pastoral counseling and in your own relationship? What have you found are the most important aspects that we need to concentrate on as parents or as husband and wife when we're engaged in that chaos?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And, you know, there's probably a variety of ways to answer that. I think, you know, as it relates to communication, I think one of the most important things that a couple can do as they're communicating in the chaos is focusing on not just what they have to say to one another, but how they say it to one another. And I think that with kids in the house, it sort of amps up the stress, and it's easy to communicate in the wrong way. We might be saying all of the right things to our spouse, but we might not be saying it in the right way. And so I think as it relates to communication, that's a big struggle for many couples. And there's an awful lot that can go a long ways in the marriage of a couple if they learn not just what they need to say, but how they say it.
Well, and we...
Yeah, I think you're...
Go ahead.
I was just going to say your tone has so much to do with that. And I remember growing up, and my mom would say to my dad, tone. You know, like if somebody said something... with a little bit of a, you know, harsh tone. And so we've kind of carried that into our family as well. And sometimes you don't mean to say it like that, but when you're stressed out, we can say things with, you know, a little bit of harshness. And so definitely that's so important.
Well, and you have some great questions in your book that kind of get us started on talking about why we believe what we believe about things like discipline or what to eat for dinner or how to raise children. And those questions kind of get behind, well, why would one parent believe that we should discipline one way and another parent might believe we should discipline another way? And it has a lot to do with our growing up, doesn't it?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think we experienced that, you know, early on. And I know I was guilty of that in our marriage in the first couple of years. I had certain expectations that I didn't even realize that I had. And those were largely due to how I was parented and certain personalities of my mom or my dad had, certain, preferences they had. And I carried those things into our marriage and oftentimes early on unfairly put those expectations on Ruth. And we certainly do that in parenting as well. We both come from such different backgrounds. You know, a couple can come from very different backgrounds, and that oftentimes causes a tremendous amount of conflict. You know, one spouse can be maybe overly strict, and the other spouse can be overly permissive, and they were raised in those two different sort of camps. And boy, that can be a real challenge for a couple as they come together and then try to discipline and raise a son or a daughter.
Well, and these are things we didn't necessarily think about until the kids were in the house, right? Or until the kids were to a point where they needed to be disciplined because we were just in the blissful married life.
That's correct. And I think just taking that time to, you know, talk about these things and, you know, sometimes we won't be proactive in that. We won't even, it'll come up and we'll realize, oh my word, we should have talked about this before. But that doesn't mean that, you know, later that night you can't sit down and work through that so that you make sure that you're on the same page moving forward.
Well, another area you talk about in your book that seems paramount to discuss is the area of finances, an area where we have in our head one expectations, like maybe we can afford kids, and yet we always seem to be ill-prepared when it comes to raising, clothing, feeding another human being, saving for college, all of those discussions that you need to have once you not only have a baby, but once that baby starts growing. Why is it so important to talk about finances?
Well, I think, statistically, you know, finances always ranks right there towards the top in terms of conflict causes for couples. And boy, we experienced that in a variety of different ways. And I share in the book how I had always dreamed about having a motorcycle. And shortly after we were married, my dream came true. You know, I got a motorcycle, and that was a short-lived dream. And, you know, we ended up selling that. And I realized that it was better for me to invest in our child. It was wiser for me to do that than to be out riding a motorcycle by myself. Hmm. And I think couples go through that. You begin to realize there's certain things that maybe we did or certain things that we've spent money on in the past. And those things now have to take a backseat to this new reality of raising a child and the very real cost of that. And I think that goes back to child-centered, God-centered, and me-centered. And I think if a couple has an overly me-centered marriage relationship, then their finances will be affected in that way, and that will be a difficult transition for them.
Mm-hmm. Ruth, was there anything along that line that was a surprise for you?
Yeah, you know, I tend to be a little more free-spirited when it comes to finances, I guess I just didn't realize the impact that having children would have on our finances. And now that our children are, well, our oldest is 14, and then we have a 12-year-old, almost 10-year-old, and a 7-year-old. And my 14-year-old eats so much food. My son, our son, you know, and you just don't think about those things. I mean, people tell you, but you kind of brush it off when they're younger. Everything from clothes to activities to everything just costs a lot more. And I think, you know, it's part of being responsible just to recognize those things and realize that in different seasons of our parenting, we're going to have to sacrifice financially in different ways. But I would totally agree that I had no idea that it would be, you know, such a big deal in marriage and parenting.
Mm-hmm. Ted and I talk about these expensive teenagers pretty much every show, and I have a 14-year-old boy as well, and now all of his 14-year-old boy friends come over as well. And so then your food pantry best be full.
That's right.
They do tend to keep growing. Go ahead.
I was just going to say one of the things that we talk about in that chapter on finances, in addition to some of those things, is, you know, that living on less doesn't always mean, you know, living less. And I think that as you transition, most couples really do face a limited budget and drained resources and, you know, pantries that get invaded by friends and all of those things. And yet at the end of the day, you know, what our kids will remember someday is the relationship we had with them, not necessarily just the possessions that we gave them. And so I think it's so important for any couple as they're struggling with that, that they don't buy into that myth that just because we have less during this season, that somehow that means we're living less. Mm. Yeah, I think that's such an important reminder for us. To stay focused on what matters most as we are engaging in a God-centered marriage and trying to raise kids to love Jesus and love the world.
Well, that's just a perfect word to end on. Patrick and Ruth Schwenk, I just thank you so much for chatting with us about your book. We'll have more information to get a hold of resources that you have at myfaithradio.com. You can just go to Connecting Faith. And, oh, we have one more segment. I'm sorry. You're coming back. Don't go away yet.
All right.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for staying with me today, even though I think my brain might be going to mush as the end of the week approaches. I'm joined by Patrick and Ruth Schwenk today. We're discussing their book, For Better or For Kids. How does life change once kids are in the house? How does that change our marriage? Well, one of the things, Patrick and Ruth, that we seem to struggle with, my husband and I, is just this increase of busyness. And we only have two children. Now, does that mean that you're twice as busy as we are because you have four children? And how do you handle that?
Yeah, no, I'm sure it doesn't, but it really is just sort of a crazy season, isn't it? When you enter into that married with kids, and you know things seem to just become that much more sort of chaotic, and your schedule gets filled that much quicker. And yeah, I think one of the things that Ruth and I have done, and we always encourage other couples to do this, is at some point is to write a mission statement for their marriage, write a, you know, a mission statement for their family. We started talking early in our marriage that, you know, you've got different companies that have mission statements for their businesses. And how much more important is, you know, marriage? How much more important is the family? And why don't we have sort of a clear, concise mission statement for what we believe God's trying to do in our marriage and in our family? And so we early on wrote just a very simple mission statement of what we were trying to accomplish. And with that, really kind of created just some values or priorities for us as a family, things like eating together on a regular basis, doing family devotions. And all of those things really help us, you know, stay centered, stay focused, because as you know, there's just so many great opportunities that get thrown at us, whether it's with sports or extracurricular activities. There's just so much to choose from in the days that we're living in. And I think it really takes wisdom. It takes having a real clear understanding of what we're trying to accomplish in our marriage to be able to say yes to some of those things and say no to others. And I think having a clear mission and set values or priorities really can help a couple set boundaries in the midst of busyness.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, just to give you a practical example of that, at our kids' age, there's so many sports, different things like that, that they can be involved in. And I know many parents struggle with, you know, trying to figure out what should we be a part of, what shouldn't we be a part of. And so a practical example of that is, say my oldest son, Tyler, wanted to play on this soccer team, and he came to us and he said, you know, I really want to do this. And we looked at the schedule and it was, you know, practice for 6 months, every, you know, 5 days a week at 5 o'clock. Well, we know that one of our values is eating dinner together. And so we look at that and say, oh, wow, you know, that is a great opportunity, but I don't think that fits in with our values. That, now, obviously, you take each situation as it comes, and maybe it's a sports team that has practiced 3 nights a week for 6 weeks, and for us, that'll work out. I'm not saying you say no to everything, but I think that if you can take all the things coming your way and measure it against those values that you've already set aside as the most important things to you as a family, it helps you, again, I know I keep saying this, but be proactive versus reactive, because what happens is all these opportunities come along and we're just saying yes, no, yes, no, and pretty soon we're driving everywhere and our lives are just chaotic. So, yeah, we've really used those values in that way.
Well, and then you
it's
might...
Probably one of the...
Well, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I was just going to say it's probably one of the most common things that I see in pastoral counseling is couples that have become so overextended in their kids' schedule or with their kids' schedules that they no longer have time for just the two of them. And it's one of the questions, anytime a couple comes in for marriage counseling, one of the questions I always ask them in that first session is, when's the last time the two of you have been on a date? Or when's the last time the two of you have been away on a weekend? And it always... is sobering when I hear responses to that question, like, well, I can't even remember the last time it was just the two of us, or, you know, we haven't dated in years. And I think that it's one of the most common things that we see, that the busyness that parents face can really sort of encroach and invade the intimacy that a husband and a wife work to enjoy. And that's difficult during the season, but it's definitely one of the biggest challenges that I've seen pastorally.
Well, and there are different changes depending on the ages of your children, too. I mean, it seems right. Like when the babies were babies, then we would be spending a lot of time together, just the three of us.
Right.
And then it's now when they're in elementary and junior high, and that's when the activities are a little bit crazy, and one of us is going one way, one of us is going the other way. And, you know, the time you flop into bed at 10:30 at night isn't really a great time to have quality conversation.
Right. Dope.
Yeah.
No, that is so true.
Nap. I was just going to say, there's no nap times anymore. There's no, you know, nothing. And kids start going to bed later, and you're like, oh, my word, where'd our time go? So, yep.
It's true. And then people start driving boats right up to your window, and it's crazy. Oh, so when you do give some great advice, though, when you do get to the point where you are running on empty, and maybe one parent feels they're running on empty and the other one isn't quite there, but they will surely get there. What are some things that couples can do to stay connected when they are running on empty?
You know, we talk about, you know, the idea of parenting being a gas guzzler in the book, and it's so easy for a parent. I mean, every good parent is a selfless parent, and yet when that selflessness sustained over an extended amount of time, you do begin to run on empty. And so I think it really requires a couple being very sensitive and attentive to one another's needs and where they're really at. You know, I remember when we were in the process of writing this book, and we were finishing up another book that Ruth was writing, and just sort of a busy time for us in ministry as well in the local church. And I was getting ready to head out that morning, and I looked at Ruth and I said, "You're not okay, are you?" I could just tell, you know, in her face that she was really struggling, and of course the tears followed from that. And we began to make some adjustments in terms of taking my day off and, you know, using that for me to be with the kids so that she could get away for 3-4 hours and respond to emails and do some work that she needed to do. And just that simple adjustment led to more fuel in her tank. And so I think it really requires just being attentive, paying attention to one another's needs. And a lot of times it's the small stuff that goes a long ways.
Well, you have a little section that's here that says, pray when your spouse needs more than you can provide. And I feel like sometimes we overlook that.
Mm. Yep. Absolutely. Definitely. That's our biggest tool, mm-hmm. you know, our biggest resource. And so many times we forget how important prayer is. Mm.
Well, and just praying for your spouse, and that somehow seems to soften my heart, at least when I'm praying for my spouse, of the challenges that he may be encountering, and not just thinking about the challenges that I'm encountering, and that seems to go a long way as well. Well, Patrick and Ruth, there are some, I know you have a workbook and some additional questions that go along with your book. Can you tell us a little bit about that, and also tell us how we can find out more information about what you've written and more information about For Better or For Kids?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, throughout the book, as you've mentioned, there are just some really helpful assessments in different chapters. You know, how do you know if you have a child-centered marriage? And how do you know if you have a me-centered marriage? There's some sections at the end of each chapter called Just the Two of Us, just providing some really helpful discussion starters for husband and wife to really continue talking through some of the content in the book.
Well, and if yes, you're – go ahead, Ruth.
And, well, I was just going to say, in the books available anywhere books are sold. So we also have on this website, if you go to forthefamily.org/forbetterorforkids, information about what we call the family map. And that is just another resource to go along with the book that helps you map out some of, like, your mission statement and your values and things like that.
So some great tools if you're listening and you want to get started on focusing on your marriage and your marriage with kids. Also, if you're a mom who's listening, you can look at Ruth's site, thebettermom.com. She just is a very talented writer and blogger, and sometimes she writes things and I think, how did she get those things out of my brain and put them on paper? So very poignant, and if you're a mom, I highly recommend it. Thanks so much, Patrick and Ruth, for writing this book, For Better or For Kids, and just for being able to kind of flesh out some ideas for us today.
Thanks so much for having us on.
Absolutely. We're going to take just a little break and listen to a song by Matthew West.
But I believe love can be restored if we take a little less this time and give a little more. So hold on to me. I promise you we'll make it through this stronger than we've ever been before. Let's be the proof that love can be restored. Now we could choose the easy way.
love can be restored. I'm gonna take a little less this time and give a little more. Hold on.
Connecting Faith, I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for being here today. Just had a great conversation with Patrick and Ruth Schwenk about their book, For Better or For Kids, and how life kind of changes for a married couple once that first child comes. Well, I'm guessing once every child comes along. I know some moms and I have had discussions on which was more difficult for you, 0 to 1, 1 to 2. And the moms who have more than two children basically say, you know what? Once you add the third and the fourth, I mean, it's just all gravy. You might as well have 5 or 6.
Right.
I don't think that would be true, though.
No, probably not. Yeah, it gets busier, you know, the more you add, obviously. But I mean, you've been on that road, too, and you have that experience. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and then if you have all of the same sex, I'm sure that gets a little bit easier, too. But then you throw a girl into the midst of three boys or something, and I'm guessing that gets a little bit more challenging.
Probably a little more dicey, yeah, in some instances.
I kept thinking as we were chatting about these challenges that come up with parents once they have kids that our poor producer, Carissa, was probably freaking out because she just got married. I think she's still in the blissful marriage stage. Is that true, Carissa?
Yes, that's absolutely true. But I also feel like I have an advantage now that I know what to expect once we do have kids.
Yeah, and it's obviously not all stress and everything. No. I mean, there's a lot of joy involved there, too, and it's a gift. Children are a gift from the Lord, and, you know, you want to have a full quiver, as the Bible says.
Right. I think it's more the unexpected. So if you're the type of person like I am, where I like to plan, I like to know what to expect, that you kind of have to throw that out the window, at least in that first year when your child is born. I had read all the books. How do I get my baby on a good sleep-wake cycle? How do I feed correctly? And then this baby does not necessarily want to follow the rules. So if you're not able to be flexible, then that can make it challenging as well on a marriage.
Yeah, definitely. And identifying your own personality types, too. You know, maybe the husband's more adaptable or vice versa, right, and the other one's the planner. Well, just identifying that going in is huge because then you understand you won't have that tension of, how come you're not doing it this way? We need to do this. And the other person's going, no, we don't.
I also loved what they said about roles. And Carissa, you're probably going through that right now with your hubby, just identifying, well, what is my role here as a wife versus what the role as a husband, meaning who takes care of this, who takes care of that. And so you're working all these things out right now. And then once you have a baby, that conversation has to take place again.
Exactly. Yeah, it seems like we're just navigating uncertain waters. But I think that, like Ruth was saying, that they're in different seasons, we just have to sacrifice and adapt as we go through it. And so I think one of the good things that she was saying about is just having a family mission statement. And I think that could really pull things together and just kind of keep the focus in the family strong and Christ-centered.
Yeah, and I think right at the end there, too, what they said about prayer, how key that is. I'm thinking right now, my own situation, my oldest daughter gets back from a mission trip today to San Francisco with the youth group. Excited to have her back, for sure. We've been praying for her actively all week. But it just hit me, well, how often do I pray that intensely for her on a day-to-day basis? You know, it's a little convicting. I need to maybe do that a little more.
Right. The really, really good words. Thanks so much for listening to that interview with Patrick and Ruth Schwenk. And maybe you'll want to go back and listen to that again to get some great ideas on how to have great conversations. Like they said, there's just some wonderful conversation starters in their book. If you're listening, you want to get a hold of that. We do still have a couple to give away. You can give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. I'm sure Carissa would love to get that in your hands if we have a couple left. You know, Pastor and Counselor Rob Green talked about this with me back in May, just about biblical advice that he shares with all couples who should meet and have some time in premarital counseling sessions to help them with the married part.
We learned to pray ACTS, A-C-T-S, Adoration, Confession, Thanksgiving, Supplication. I never liked ACTS for a couple of reasons. One is I never understood what supplication meant. And secondly, it always seemed appropriate to begin prayer with confession.
I'm playing the wrong one there. You were talking about Rob Green, right? Sorry to interrupt that.
I was talking about Rob Green. And I was
I just wanted to interrupt that and get to the right one. Here's Rob Green. Sorry.
The Word of God gives so much information regarding biblical love and describes it. A whole chapter is dedicated to what biblical love looks like. And it's so encouraging to talk to couples about that. In fact, one of the things I love doing is having them read 1 Corinthians 13 and to think, you know, love is kind, love is not jealous, it doesn't boast, all of the wonderful descriptions that the text uses. And then I want to hear their reaction to that. And here's what I'm actually hoping for. I'm hoping that at the end of their study of 1 Corinthians 13, they come to the conclusion that they can never, ever do that. In fact, we did a sermon series here at our church from 1 Corinthians 13, and there were several of us who were preaching. And as I was listening to others and I was preparing for the ones that I was going to be teaching on, I was just confronted with the reality of, have I ever loved anybody? Mm-hmm. Because I realized that I can't do that in my own strength. And it reminds us just how significant Christ is, and his presence and the Spirit of God indwelling in us, and just how significant it is for us to depend on him, because we could never do that on our own. We couldn't love like the Lord has loved us without his gracious help. And so what I love to hear is for couples to walk in and say, you know, Rob, that was a really challenging set of scriptures, and I don't think I can do that. And that is exactly the kind of dependency that will actually allow them to do it, because all of us would say that. We can't do it, but we do know somebody who can and somebody who can help us.
Well, there is something to be said, isn't there, for that surrender, that we need to surrender the fact that we are incapable of loving like that. But that does kind of put the onus then on Christ rather than on the other person. You write about how sometimes early married couples tend to kind of put that onus of loving and supplying every need on that person, and that's really not what we should be doing.
Yeah, you know, I think many people, because they're excited, and I want you to know that whenever we're doing a premarital counseling, we just love to celebrate that with these couples. I mean, it is an exciting time in their life, and for some of them, a lifelong dream is at least becoming true. And the lifelong dream of becoming true is, you know, I actually get to be married, and I found somebody who God has brought into my life, and this is so encouraging. And so I want to celebrate all of that. But what I want to help them to do is to remember that what God has equipped that other person to be is their spouse, not their hero and not their savior. There's only one person who fits the job description of a savior, and that's the Lord Jesus.
I loved that clip and that whole conversation with Rob Green, because it was this realization that when we get married, we do kind of have these expectations. Oh, now my life is full. I mean, the right. Jerry Maguire, you complete me. Yeah. It's just such a farce, because only Christ can complete us. And that other person can certainly be our partner, but we don't think about that always before we're getting into marriage.
No, we don't. And, you know, I appreciate what he said, too, about premarital counseling. What my wife and I did, and I recommend this to everyone, is even pre-engagement counseling, where you're actually just being honest with each other. And, yes, you want the surprise and, you know, of the asking the question moment and everything, which you can still have. But it's just being honest with the significant other and going, I'm thinking about this. Are you thinking about this? Well, let's go to a professional and just kind of walk through some of the areas that couples typically struggle with, finances, in-laws, et cetera. And just figure out, is this something that God is calling us to, marriage with each other, you know? So.
Well, and yes, because you do then get to flush out some of those. Well, I want children. I don't want children.
Right.
I mean, you get to have some of those conversations. I want to live in, you know, whatever state for the rest of my life, three doors down from my mother.
Yeah.
And so then you can have those conversations long before the ring is put on the finger and the vows are made.
And better to find any disagreements, big disagreements or red flags, if you will, then instead of way into a marriage, right?
Mm. Well, just so much to think about today, and really it has a lot to do with just communicating with that person whom you love about not only why you love them, because love, like Rob Green was saying, isn't going to save the day. Only Christ can save us through the love that he has for us. And so such a great reminder. And you know what? The other clip was talking about prayer and Acts. That's really important, too.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, shifting gears a little bit here, we do have a message on making your life count today as well from Steve Douglas. And he is talking, do you have it over there, Joe? He's talking about reminding us about faith, I believe.
Yes, why our faith is so important.
So I started growing exponentially when I got authentic community.
Growing as a believer in Christ takes time. Today on Making Your Life Count, Andy Mineo talks about how his friends helped him in that process.
I think one of the lies that we believe is that, like, our faith is private, personal. In a sense, it is, but in the other sense, like, God calls us to live out this Christian life as a body, coming together and Voltron action, encouraging each other, pouring into each other, calling each other out on sin, you know what I'm saying? And in a lot of ways, we miss out on the richness of community. And in community is when mentorship or discipleship happens. There's somebody there that you'll cling to or will know more than you, and you'll start asking them questions, and they'll start pouring into you, and you'll walk through the scriptures together. And that's discipleship, even if it's not directly intentional.
Do you want to learn more about how you can make a difference in people's lives? Go to makingyourlifecount.com.
Oh, such wise words there from Stephen Douglas. You know, we are coming to the close of our program, but I just wanted to remind you, if you heard just a little bit of that interview, or maybe you missed the whole thing, you'd like to hear that once again, you can go to our website at myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, and you'll hear the interview with Patrick and Ruth Schwenk about their book, For Better or for Kids, A Vow to Love Your Spouse with Kids in the House. I also have a couple of reminders. If you want to participate in the Live Free Challenge, this is the last day to sign up where you'll win a free t-shirt. And of course, that means you'll be highlighting not only Faith Radio, but also the importance of ending sex trafficking. So we'd love to get you that t-shirt. You can go online at myfaithradio.com and read all about that. The last official day to sign up is on the 31st of July.
That t-shirt can really be a great conversation starter too. People ask you, what's that? And you can tell them. They could end up sponsoring you and help us reach our goal. We're trying to reach $50,000 with International Justice Mission to put an end to human trafficking. So get that t-shirt, start a conversation, and get some more support.
Great cause, and you'll get in shape.
Yeah, that's right. It's a faith fitness challenge. Yeah, you were looking at me there, Joe, I think.
Well,
I know.
Oh, no,
I know. I'm just convicted. I know you weren't looking at me. It's just me. My issues.
We're trying to make everyone well-rounded, no pun intended,
yeah, right.
to not only live out their faith, but be able to help others as well in the Live Free Challenge. So you can head online at myfaithradio.com. All of the information is there to sign up. Today's the last day to get a t-shirt, but you can still sign up for the event, for the challenge until 7:31. So we do have a little bit of time. Thanks so much for joining us on Faith Radio. We so appreciate you listening to Connecting Faith today. And hopefully, if you were encouraged and inspired, you can go on and make your marriage better and your marriage with kid better as well. We also have a welcome packet if you're listening for the first time. If you're a new listener, please go to myfaithradio.com. Get your welcome gift today. We'd love to put that in your hands.
Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend, Joe.
Okay, you too, Ted.
Hey, U.S. Bank Stadium's open now, by the way. They just cut the ribbon on it.
It is. Ted's wearing purple and gold to highlight that. So if you are a Minnesotan or a Vikings fan, this is a good day for you as well. Have a great weekend.